Hey, and welcome back to the Rapsodo Baseball Podcast with Seth and BP. BP and I just count our blessings every day when we get to go and work with these incredible athletes, coaches, etc. One of the reasons that we wanted to start this podcast is to bring those incredible people that we get to work with directly to you guys and fill you in on some of the conversations that we get to have with them. This is one of those conversations. If you're into pitching, pitch design, player development, and really just kind of perseverance and making yourself better, you're going to want to listen to this podcast today. Today, we're going to be with the Tigers Southpaw ace, Matt Boyd.
Yeah, he's one of the guys in the pitching world that does it the best, top 10 in strikeouts last year. And as a pitcher myself and all of you pitchers out there that are listening, you can really pick up some awesome things from his progression and the way he handles things in the offseason and really perfects his game.
It's a weird time in baseball right now, and he's a guy that's still working hard, trying to stay sharp, and he's a guy that's over the course of his career created new pitch types, kind of reinvented his arm slot, and he's gone from a closer to a starter in college. A guy that I think you're really going to get to be able to learn a lot from.
When we talk about Rapsodo people, you know, he's really one of our people. He's on the Rapsodo pro staff and a guy that really any player, any pitcher out there can really model their game after.
Matthew Boyd, appreciate you being here, man.
Thanks for having me on, Seth. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Doing some research, I caught myself. I just said Matt, but I saw the video that you had that had kind of gone out, that it went a little viral inside of the Tigers organization. So I'm going to do my best to stick with Matthew for you.
It's all good. You can do either one. It doesn't matter. My mom wanted me to go by Matthew in the program. So I asked them, and then it caused everyone's like, oh, you want to go by Matthew? I don't even care. It's just trying to respect my mom. That was it. So yeah.
I get that. Got to respect your mamas, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I mean, first off and foremost, I know it's kind of a crazy time. What's life look like for you right now?
Just here at home. I mean, enjoying time with family, my wife and two kids and our dog. And, I went down to the stadium, and luckily I'm out here in Detroit, and went down and unloaded the weight room kind of into my pickup, and have a, you know, makeshift weight room down in our basement with, we got nice 10-foot ceilings down there. So we got a big concrete wall. So able to throw stuff up against that and get training done and just going to the park and throwing and, making the most of this time. Really, it's really nice to have all this time with family right now.
For sure. Yeah, I think one of the things that's kind of overlooked, I know it's a little bit hectic and everybody else out there is, you know, dealing with things that not everybody else has to deal with. And I know that and respect that, but it has been nice. I have a couple little kids at home as well. So being able to have that family time, that's huge right now. So we're trying to lean into that too.
Yeah, completely. Completely.
Yeah. Just real quickly going back, I know that you've dealt a little bit with our kind of pro staff guy, Dylan Saffel, but we're doing a little bit of background and saw that you guys are both out of the Sammamish, Washington area.
I know, exactly. It was such a small world. I gave him my address. He's like, no way, you live out there? I was like, you know, I think our kids will go to the same high school that he went to. It's like, yeah, no, it's funny. Small world, yeah.
That's cool, man. We have, obviously, I think a lot of our listeners are that, like, college coaches, college players, players that maybe want to go from high school to playing college ball. And you obviously graduating from, you know, Oregon State University, one of the powerhouses. I definitely wanted to bring that up, as I think our listeners would love to hear about it. If, you know, you still stay in touch with those guys that, you know, you played ball with, that organization, any like specific memories from the Oregon State days?
Yeah. Oh, so many. Those coaches at Oregon State were like surrogate fathers to me, still are. I mean, Nate Yeske, you know, just moved on this last year. He's he's the associate head coach now at U of A at Arizona. But I mean, we talk all the time. We talk after starts, sides. He's always been, you know, a guy that's pushed me, always been a guy that I can always lean on for advice. And, you know, him and my dad are probably the two influential forces of who, maybe to who I am as a pitcher, you know. And Coach Casey and Coach Bailey out there, I mean, they're just molders of men. You know, they what they've done is so far beyond the baseball field. It goes into every facet of life. And what happened out there when I was there was so special. I mean, all my teammates and I were still close. I mean, that senior squad, my senior year, 2013, it was kind of rare that, you know, we almost had, I think we had like five guys from our freshman recruiting class, all stick all the way around to senior year. And all of us, I think, except one of us played pro ball too. You know, I mean, not to mention the classes behind us that were so close-knit. Guys like Conforto and Dylan Davis and Andrew Moore. I mean, he goes on and on. Like, it's just a family. We all stay in touch. We all train together still. Ben Wetzler. It's just like the list goes on and on. Jace Fry, Josh Osich. I mean, it's really special. And gosh, some of the memories that we have. We were such a close-knit team. There were like 10 of us that lived in two houses right next to each other. One of us, I think the whole rotation lived in one house, in our house, as well as like a closer and all pitchers. And the next door was like Conforto, Davis, Dan Child, a few other guys. We always hung out together. We always played, you know, we were whether it was Nintendo 64, pushing each other in the weight room or, you know, on the field. I mean, it was such a good time. It made the times like, in the games, we had each other's backs, you know, and it still goes to this day. You know, I mean, there's a group of us that, you know, we're all of us talk all the time. We have a big team group thread from back then that still goes on. And, you know, there's still like five or six of us playing Xbox together, like, you know, some nights and stuff, you know? So, I mean, it's a lot of fun. We had a lot of good time.
I'm curious, who was the Mario Kart champ in the room?
Oh man. I mean, that's, there were some heated cards. It was Mario Kart and Super Smash.
Yeah, right. We had the same thing in our locker room. Yeah.
It was, we had like the two TV setup. We had like the old school, like 600-pound big screen that was out of someone's living room back in the day. And that had the N64 on it. And then we had the TV that usually had like MLB Network or, you know, ESPN on all the time. And it was, I mean, we had fights breaking out over Mario Kart and Super Smash all the time. It was a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It was hilarious for everybody, but the two guys involved and that were getting at it. But that's we're brothers, right? So, you know.
You know, that close-knit you talk about, totally get it. We had the baseball house, you know, the video games like you talked about, and those are the guys. So that's awesome. Man, I wanted to touch on two Oregon State's obviously a place to be seen, you know, always, you know, in the power rankings, very, very well respected. You know, you had that opportunity to get drafted in that 13th round by the Reds and then, you know, seen and having, you know, that next season bump into top six round, you know, with the Blue Jays. But, you know, as you made that transition over to the Tigers, you know, a team that we see on our end, you know, kind of forefront of meaning putting their foot forward on like the development and analytics side, you know, kind of what's that journey been like and you know, how's that helped you get to where you are now?
Yeah, a journey has been crazy. You know, it's always in a stage of growth. You know, nothing is ever constant. You can never be complacent or content. That's where you flatline. That's where things, you know, start to go the wrong direction. You know, I've been fortunate enough, and this was kind of instilled in me from my father, is always try to flip over every stone. And not in the sense of like searching, not knowing who you are, but understanding who you are and looking for ways to get better. It's a fine line between those two things. Everywhere from, I remember when I learned my slider, that's become a weapon for me, was a rain delay. You know, I was setting up and closing for Oregon State my first 3 years. I was a hitter and then I was in the bullpen my first 3 years. And then hitting kind of went by the wayside. I just focused on pitching, you know, late in games, almost felt like every game I was hot. And in my senior year is the year I started. But that junior year, we had a rain delay at University of Portland. I remember asking, you know, Yeski, hey, how do you throw a slider? You know, because I just do a big slurvy kind of curveball and change up and heater. And we were just, you know, 2 hours and I'm just messing around. I threw it and it was like a frisbee. And I was like, oh my gosh. And he like, I threw it again. He's like, finally had to tell me to stop. He's like, stop throwing it so much. And you're going to pitch tonight. He's like, hey, if you face that lefty though, if you feel good, throw it, you know? And I was like, okay. Sure enough, I come in and I got bases loaded against their three hole hitter. It was a pretty good left-handed hitter. And, I just snap it off in like a 2-2 count and buckle him on it. And I just look at the dugout like, whoa, what just happened? I just learned something new. And then it develops. Right. And you know, as I became a starter, it became more of a weapon. It became a big weapon that senior year. And it was like, wow, I have four pitches now. I can do so many different things. You know, getting drafted. Going back to school was a big thing for me. That's a whole nother story that I, you know, make this question probably way too long-winded. And it was a God thing though. And it was the best decision of my life. So many things happened that senior year, you know, becoming a starter that year and learning how to adapt in that sense really helped propel me for pro ball and everything that, you know, I had to take ownership in the weight room and do some extra stuff to work on my conditioning that, you know, I only went 1-2 innings, you know, for the majority of the college season and go start in summer ball. I wasn't prepared to be a starter in the terms of conditioning. So I really pushed myself that leading up summer and the fall. I raised my arm slot because I was throwing real low. And consequently, that actually bumped my velo up a little bit in the time. I took ownership of calling pitches and understanding how to set guys up a little better, you know, doing my own scouting reports. You know, Yeski would give me film of the team from weeks before, and I would break down their lineup and understand how I was going to attack them, and understanding through that what my own strengths were. Then I get in the pro ball, and it's like I have this whole repertoire of like what I know how to do. And then it was just all out, go forward. And, you know, going with the Blue Jays, being a sixth round senior sign, I don't know if I was a prospect or wasn't a prospect. You know, dollar sign that I signed for wouldn't indicate that I was a prospect. But I'm so thankful for that Blue Jays regime because they just gave me a shot. And it was just straight up forward. If you pitch good, you're going to go up. If you don't pitch good, you're going to go down. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, my first year at pro ball, I dominated high A in the first part of the first month. And I just got, you know, the guys in double A the next month, you know, mopped the floor with my face just – and then it was like a cycle. The next month I go dominate in high A and then go down in double A and get beat up again. And it was like, okay, I just kind of hit this wall. Like, what do I need to do different? I had a bone chip removal surgery that year at the end of that season in 2014. And I remember I called Yeski. It was like Thanksgiving, and this kid named John Pomeroy played on my dad's a summer ball coach back in Seattle. And one of his players was at Oregon State, and Big John comes back home and he's like pumping, you know, he'd always be like high 80s, low 90s. Then he's pumping mid 90s, upper 90s in a bullpen around Christmas. And I'm going, so I call down, I go, hey, what do you guys call Yeski? I go, what are you doing down there? And he's like, we started this weighted ball program. It's actually up by you. It was driveline. So 2014, I go into driveline. I go from throwing 86 to 89 every outing, touching 90, 91, you know, getting outs, but just doing it that way to all of a sudden the next spring throwing 91 to 95 and having way more life on my baseball and understanding how everything works better. And then that's the year I debut. That's the year I get traded. And same thing. I pitched well. I got up the triple A, pitched well, got to the big leagues, got beat up in the big leagues. Then we got really beat up and I got sent down. And then, you know, I got traded over the Tigers with Daniel and Jairo Laborde. And same thing as just kind of happened with the Tigers, right? It's, they've given me every opportunity. And, you know, I've had my times where I've gotten beat up, you know, and those times are going to continue to happen. I'd be lying if I said that I've got it all figured out, because I don't, you know, but it's that constant evolution and growth, whether it's taking a repertoire of my game or taking a whole broader aspect of like, how can I recover better? If I want to be the best person I can be on the start day, what do I need to do in those 5 days leading up to it? And curtailing a routine that's really focused on how I can be the best, and a diet that's the same way, and the recovery aspect of what are the modalities that I can add in to make me the best on that fifth day. Because if I can be the best version of myself every single day, when I take the ball on that fifth day, I'm doing my team the best job to help us put in position to win.
Yeah, that's awesome. BP kind of alluded to this earlier, but we get the opportunity to go out and meet with all the different teams that are out there. And one of the big things that that we do is get to spend time with organizations and kind of help train them and get them going. And the Tigers specifically, you know, you kind of have the narrative in the industry being a little bit more like old school and old school minded, but really from our side, that's not the way that it is. And we see so much develop there. And then we work with so many of the individual pitchers too, right? There's so many of our guys and the pro staff that are there. I wonder, you know, if that's something that they look for. Do they look for guys kind of like you that are into, you know, your own personal development and growth and building out that plan and kind of working together in that sort of fashion?
I think that that's something that's probably hard to teach. It takes a little bit of time to develop someone that, you know, try to teach someone how to do that. But I think when you have guys that are willing to do everything they can to become better, you know, in the right way, that's when things are really exciting. And that's when you can start to have that behavior that becomes infectious, right? If you got the guy doing it the right way that wants to do the best they can, not for themselves, but for the team, something greater. And that's when things can really, like, okay, you get five guys doing that, man, that's the start of something special. You get 10 guys doing that, man, that's close to half the team. And you get the majority of the team doing that, everybody else is going to start following along. And then all of a sudden you create a culture that's willing to learn, willing to grow, willing to get better in every kind of facet of their game. knowing that everyone's holding the rope and pulling in the same direction and wanting to understand how we can make this thing happen for all of us. And that's when you can really get a culture of success and a culture of, you know, that's in constant growth, always looking for a way to get better. And I mean, I think that's kind of the gold standard for anybody, right? Like that's you just got to have the right people that and people that are always willing to learn in every aspect of it.
Yeah, for sure. We were down there, and they were actually one of the first teams too that were very open with the fact that they were using Rapsodo and sharing pictures and videos and doing training with it. And it was neat for us to get to work with Jay and everybody over there along that. It's just good people. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they are. They are great people. And that's, you know, the cool thing about the Tigers is that you need the coupling of both, right? You can't, I think when people say old school, new school, you know, you shouldn't just put people in boxes because that's, you're doing a disservice to both sides, right? And that's the cool thing is that, like, we have an awesome relationship with Rick Anderson. And he's got a plethora of baseball knowledge, pitching knowledge. And, you know, he probably, you know, punch me for saying this, but like, I mean, he's forgotten more than I know, you know, and that's not speaking to his age. That's speaking to how many people he's been around. I mean, the guy was Johan Santana's coach, you know, for goodness sake, like he got to be his pitching coach for his tenure as the Twins. And that's, you know, in Liriano, I mean, the list goes on and on. Radke, you know, it's impressive. And you get around all those guys and you couple with what he says. And, you know, it's something that's like, okay, he's saying this. And all of a sudden you see the diagram on the Rapsodo and coupling it with a high speed camera. And you're going, oh, that's what you're trying to tell me exactly. And then you make the adjustment, try to get your fingers here and that's going to create this. And then boom, look at that. Hey, you know, you can't catch that with the naked eye, but this is what the data says and you're doing it now. That's impressive, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that is, you know, when you couple the two things together, you can get that real perfect marriage of growth, experience, development. That's when like things start to get really fun. And we have an awesome situation that the Tigers have presented us with people to break down the data, the equipment itself, and the knowledge background, right? From everybody that's in our sphere, from that, we just hired Dan Hubbs, who also knows, you know, he's got a background in this, and it's like, oh, we have an awesome team that's willing to prepare our players as a team to go forward. And I think that's something that's really, really special.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We always tell coaches this has nothing to do with replacing or trying to do anything like that. It just really amplifies great coaching. A lot of times they see it with their eyes. It's not something that they need the tool, but the tool is such a reference point for the pitcher to be able to kind of make that verbal cue stick into something that actually feels mechanical and understand it. So, yeah, we see that happen more often than not.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Cool. Obviously, right now, we've been down and we did the spring training trips before everything got cut off and spent a little bit of time down in Lakeland. But obviously, with where we're at now and what the world is today, it's, you know, we're trying to live a life without a lot of baseball, which we said before gets a lot of family time, which is a bonus, and not a lot of baseball time, which is not so much of a bonus around that. But just curious, you know, obviously, you mentioned what you're doing from a training aspect with being able to stay at home. So lucky too, to be able to be close to the stadium and be able to take advantage of that. And have that opportunity. What's life look like for you from a training standpoint? And then if and when, you know, hopefully we're knocking on wood that it'll come back sooner rather than later. What's that look like from a preparation time for you to get, you know, your body ready?
Body's ready, right? Body is never not ready unless you're injured. I'm a firm believer that, especially in the weight room, when you're going in there and you're taking time off, you got to take time to let your body recover from injury. But you're always doing something, you know, whether you're in an on-ramping stage or you're really pushing it or you're maxing out or, you know, you're deloading and trying to let your body recover, right? I work at a place called Athletic Training Institute out in Bellevue, Washington. We got a great team of people that from, you know, Kirk Bradshaw, Austin Hall, Benny, you know, Devin McKee from the, it's everything from muscle activation techniques, which is what I do to kind of always stay ready. They, you know, Kirk is constantly training, like working on my nervous system, trying to stay, you know, continue to be in a place that, you know, working everything firing so I can repeat at, and raise my thresholds and within my body as best we can. You know, Devin McKee is the one who's helping me on the health and performance side of things. And, you know, with the diet and whatnot, and Devin works with Austin and Ben writing the workouts. And like right now, you know, we're loading it up. We're trying to push as much weight as we can. In another 2 weeks, we're going to hit that stage where we're probably going to deload for a week, which we would have in the season. And on that side of things, that's where we're at. On the pitching side of things, it's a little trickier. You know, you start throwing your bullpens mid-January and you get ready and you get built up for spring. Well, the longer that we're down, the longer it's going to take to build back up. And at the same breath, the longer that we're down, the later we're probably going to play into the year. You know, no one in the world thinks this except the 25 guys in our clubhouse or 30 guys, whatever we're going to have. But well, Tigers believe we're going to play till into November and through November, because that's probably when the World Series is going to be. Well, you don't want to be pitching from January to November and then leave yourself with 2 months off, right? So it's that fine line right now, teetering on that line of, okay, like right now I'm throwing 5 days a week. I'm taking 2 days off. And my mindset is that I just got built up. I've got my whole program from Driveline that I've developed and working on. And, you know, we've got a new program for this kind of in-between phase we're in. When that bell curve of the sickness starts to go to the good side of it for everyone, this thing's starting to die off a little bit. And then we'll start throwing every day. And bullpens will go from Wednesdays to 2 days a week to building up into a simulated game sort of thing. And that can happen pretty fast because we were at 70 pitches. But it's also that tempering right now, saying, okay, we got to stay, the volume's got to stay high, but we also got to build in some structured off days that we can develop that we can recover in the right way with the arm. Also give time rest, give some certain kind of like structured rest that'll pay dividends down the year when it does start to get that full baseball schedule going. So it's weird, but it's, you know, like getting ready for a bullpen tomorrow sort of thing.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're always interested in, especially with our pro staff guys, is just talking about how technology is coming in the game. You sort of mentioned a little bit about how you started taking ownership of your player development and started building out pitches and looking at that from like in a whole complete arsenal point of view. And then obviously talking about what you're doing, on ramping and continued development from a body standpoint, that seems like it never rests. But we're always curious. When you talk about the technology that's in the game today, how does that come into play? How did you get it hooked up from a Rapsodo standpoint? Was it actually at Driveline that you got introduced to it?
Yeah, first time was at Driveline when I don't even know if it was available on the market yet. They had it in there and we were working with it. And, you know, I go down to Driveline, they write my programs. I work with the pitch design guys every so often. And it got to the point now where it's like I have my own. I have my own Edgertronic camera. I have a mound that we put in at Athletic Training Institute. It's just closer to home right now. And I go down and I do pitch design stuff with Bill and Spencer down there at Driveline. You go through a season, it's like, how can you get better? There's things that you can do that, you know, you just got to look at it with kind of set up. You got to put a lab coat on and you say, what did I do this year? What did I do good? This is what I did good. What did I do bad? This is what I didn't do good. Okay, so things that I can improve on. How much of it is needing to reinvent the wheel? How much of it is maybe I just need to do this instead? Like, oh, well, I need to throw my changeup a little more. Well, I can do that. Some of it's, well, my fastball, I was coming out of my delivery. Well, does that mean a little more focused in my delivery throughout the year? Well, that's probably what it means. I can focus on different cues later on. The things that were more prominent on the forefront of my mind in April, May, and June started slipping as the season went on. Is all these things going to guarantee success? No, but there are ways I can get better. Okay, well, I didn't use my curveball. Well, that's because my curveball wasn't good. When I threw it, you know, guys hit it. So how can I make it better? So that was like, okay, well, that's one thing. We want to make the curveball better. Since I didn't throw the changeup, we're like, let's just do little things to work on the changeup, pitch design-wise. And I've always been interested in how I can get more vertical break on my fastball. So let's learn and figure out ways that can increase vertical break. I get a lot of swings and misses up in the zone, man. If I could increase that window of my swing and misses, I mean, I'm not throwing 96 every pitch, right? You know, but I'm doing something different that works. How can I continue to work with what I have and make it even more effective? So we went in and working with Ben over at ATI, one thing that we were focusing on is, okay, all the stuff with the pitch design is awesome. But if my body is in the same position every single, like is close to being in the same position every single pitch, the variance of what's going to happen at the end of the chain with my fingers and release and grip is going to change. If I can't keep from the ground up, keep it right. So in that, like, we were focusing on, in 2014, I had plantar fasciitis, and my left foot, my dry foot, is kind of flat. Well, because that's flat, I become very quad dominant when I'm pitching and running and doing a lot of lifts. Well, then, you know, got in there, and Ben's like, one thing that we focused on going into our workouts was, let's try to keep that in supination. Think of you keeping your femur and tibia in supination. So when you're doing that, taking your knee out there, it's going to actually activate your glute. Well, it's like, I start doing that. I do it in my lifts. I'm doing it in every kind of focusing on this, on how I walk. I feel it in my, and then I feel it like when I actually time it gets on the mound, I start to throw and I'm going, wow, I'm actually driving from my whole foot right now. And it feels less effort. So then we do that, right? And then we get the drive line and we're doing some pitch design stuff and we have the power plates out and we're going, oh, that's affirming. Look at how, like, my force plates, look at where the force is coming out of the ground. This is working. And like the ball's jumping out of my hand better. It's in the data. Wow, my vertical break is up on my fastball and bullpens. Velo is the same. I'm still throwing 84 in January, you know, and that's perfectly fine with me. But my vertical breaks up. Who knows what that'll be at the end of spring training, because that all just works up together. We're going in there and we're saying, okay, so with the curveball, I mean, it really took four pitches. And we're talking with Bill and Spencer. We're like, okay, let's see if you can keep your wrist supination a little bit longer, because you're seeing it on the camera and my wrist is coming open a little bit. It's something that Rick Anderson was always telling me, but tough to make those adjustments on the fly in season, you know, in the middle of a 33 start season when you're preparing for every 5 days. So we're going, you know, we're working on this curveball, and all of a sudden, you know, I keep in supination and the vertical break goes up, or the spin efficiency goes up. And then I take, you know, we just take my finger off it and put the, you know, not a true spike, but kind of put the pad of my finger on the ball with that supination thought. And all of a sudden the vertical break goes way down and the spin rate and spin efficiency stay high. And it's like, oh, well, now let me think that same cue, throw into my glove side, because that's always like the thing that gets me back to right. And then it's like, wham, that's the feeling. Okay, like, let's earmark those pitches. We got the video of it. And I always have a journal with me, you know, from writing down scripture daily or prayers to baseball. Everything's kind of in there. And it's, you know, I write down a few cues that I thought. And it's like, okay, I'm going to think about those with every pitch, not just my curveball, and let that develop. And it's, you know, you start to see these like paths of like, wow, this is, I used to do something similar to this, I think, because of the way it feels. But now I have like a new assigned meaning to it and it makes sense. And then it's like, you know, you think of baseball and learning and life in that kind of sense. You go, man, how much, I know who I am today. I don't know where I'm going to be tomorrow, but I know I'm going to grow from it. And that's kind of been the cool part of coupling technology, and a long-winded answer is coupling technology and everything going forward.
I love that you bring up the cues, because I think that's something that all players, coaches are kind of looking for, right? Is, we've made mention before of referring to the data points and maybe the whole mechanics as a puzzle, right? Each player is different. You mentioned you changed your arm slot, you know, previously in your career and saw an increase in velocity. I mean, every player is different with little pieces of the puzzle, you know, to fine tune and finding different things. Like you mentioned, I know you're a guy that's big on the mechanics, foot landing, repeating that. So I love that you bring that up, because I think that can go a long way for our players, you know, listening, that it is little different things. It's a process. I think that's a perfect testimonial that it is a process and finding things along the way.
It is. No, I mean, completely. I mean, you know, I still get made fun of by my teammates. I'm still doing towel drills on the mound, you know, 4 out of 5 days in between my starts. And it's literally all just to feel my delivery. It's feedback, everything, data, you know, what's going on in your brain. It's all just feedback. And it's all this data you can collect to make yourself better going forward. If you look at it that way, it can be paralyzing or it can be productive. And, you know, it's all perspective in that sense.
Cool. I'm going to get into a little bit of like pitch specific data and run through that. And we get to cheat a little bit, I guess, because unlike most folks that need to go to like Baseball Reference or something, we know your Rapsodo data. So we can kind of pull that up. I won't get into too many details, but there are a couple things that were really, really striking to BP and I when we look through it. We have a couple things like movement matrix and release matrix. And some guys dive into those, some guys just look at the data. But what we see is kind of like the average spread of your pitches and how those guys play off each other. And then on the flip side, the average release. and what they look like. And I think it the picture that's painted on these, and maybe when we post out the podcast, we'll try to put out some visuals and stuff that can come with it. But when we talk about how tight the release is off of certain pitches and how they pair with each other, you can really see a very clear picture for you of like this pitch type overlays on top of the other one, where your curveball comes out of the same slot as your fastball almost identically. And there's not even, I think it's like a tenth of an inch or something like that different between the two. And I'm sure that that's something that had to be worked on and done. But the spread also that you get from talking about different arm slots, with the movement from your fastball and then the movement of your, you know, maybe newly found updated new version 2.0 curveball that you worked on, that sort of thing is always impressive to me, and understanding how that arsenal is really built. Do you look at that from an off-season standpoint about pitches pairing off of each other?
Completely. You know, you always get the feedback from, I'm fortunate enough that the guy who catches me in the offseason is my wife's cousin. He's an Oregon State Beaver. He got up to AAA with the Twins last year. His name's Caleb Hamilton. So, he understands me. I throw to him a lot. And you get his feedback. Hey, how's this look? He's going, man, that's amazing. It's way different. You know, but then you're looking and going, okay, well, my fastball is anywhere from 15 to 19 inches of vertical break, like in the bullpen. And, you know, that keeps getting tighter and tighter. Like yesterday or last week, it was 17 to 19. Then you go, okay, well, my changeup is, I want to keep that below 10. So I look at that and that's like, I look at that grouping and that's like, okay, that's if I can get that at 9 to 10 inches of vertical break, man, that's great. That's, you know, that's potentially 10 inches off my fastball. And then my slider is negative 11 on average usually. And then my curveball now is anywhere from negative 17 to negative, I mean, sometimes I can snap it off at 24 lately with just figuring out and still getting the feel of it. Right. And you're going, okay, this is this huge window of up and down where if I can mirror these things coming out at the same line, wow, it's really going to make things different. It's different. Like I'm adding a whole nother 10 inches below my slider when I didn't have that last year.
I was just going to make mention, I definitely wanted to highlight, you know, last year, you know, in 2019, very impressive numbers on strikeouts, you know, being top 10, that obviously, you know, very, very impressive with all the elite arms we have in today's game. And, you know, just kind of looking into that and, you know, following you on the mound with that very, very strong fastball slider combination, you're obviously creating a lot of deception there, you know, getting 43%, you know, whiff rate on the slider. So you're obviously very, very elite at creating that deception between those two pitches. Is there anything that, you know, you kind of credit, you know, in that process to getting the strikeouts so high in that season?
So, I mean, for me, it's a coupling of understanding where to go with the pitch with my scouting reports. I know my strengths. What are their weaknesses? Where are their swing and misses? Because when it gets to swing and miss time, that's when I'm chasing a swing. I mean, I know where I want to go, and it's sometimes it's by the book. But it's a coupling of a lot of things. It's saying, what do I see in the box? You know, I remember Steve Pierce, like, there was a stat like 2 years ago that, I go into the game and apparently Steve Pierce is, hitting 182 off lefty fastballs down away. So it's like, yeah, I know where I'm going to go with my fastball until he makes an adjustment. But then I get in the box and he gets in the box and he's like just covering that side. And I'm going, sure enough, I don't go with my gut. I say, I want to go back in. Hits a double off the wall. The next 2 years, I start pounding them in and then things change for me, you know, seeing those things, right? So like, it's a coupling of like, the reason we had that success was the preparation with Grayson and Hixie and Raji and, you know, Bobby Wilson last year, all our catchers and Rick, the preparation of understanding where I'm going to go, how I'm going to attack this guy. And then like, you have your plan, but then once the at-bat comes out, it's, you have the plan, you trust your ability, and now you just attack and you let your eyes trust. You let your eyes read it out. I'm still learning this. You ask me this question next week or, you know, after we start playing some games, I'll probably answer it differently because I'm continuing to learn, right? I mean, you know, I get to talk to someone that does it way better than me. I mean, you know, I'm going to listen, but that's how that was last year for me, is understanding these things and, you know, coupling this all together and saying, wow, you know, well, it says not to throw this guy sliders in or slider the back door, but I just threw a changeup that faded off the plate and he took it out there. You know, his eyes faded off. I throw a slider off that same line, I'm going to buckle him. He's going to think it's that changeup and it's going to come back for a strike, you know, or something, little things like that. Understanding what's playing out in front of you based on the swing or based on his takes and whatnot. And then being able to execute that. And that's the other thing. So, you know, you bring up the strikeouts, but being so two-dimensional also was my downside because I lived throwing my heater in And when it leaked back middle, what was coming into that was my slider. So I got very one-dimensional. That's why I gave up so many home runs as well. I think I could go not, I could go make, have four pitches and make home pitches and give up more home runs next year. I don't know what's going to happen. But I think in that same breath, having some more separation, being able to use both sides of the plate with my heater and now my changeup and now a curveball that is even better, it's going to change the profile of what's going out there.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting with the, you know, the dominance you had with sequencing those two pitches primarily. And, you know, adding, you mentioned pitch design, you're obviously putting in all that work. It's really exciting to see, you know, a pitch or two to the arsenal sharpened up. We see that from guys, and that's exciting to see.
Well, thank you, man. I'm very grateful for the people around me that have helped prepare me and give me eyes to understand and help me stay aware. And I'm continuing to learn, right? I don't have it figured out. The one thing I do know is that I don't know anything. And I continue to learn that I really don't know anything every single day of this life. So each day goes on. So, you know, I'm grateful for the people around me.
For sure. We talk about that you don't have to have a physics degree to start to understand this stuff and put it into practice. It's really just a feeling out process. Just throw.
Yeah, exactly. Speech calm and broadcasting. I was able to figure it out. So, you know, out of state school. So, you know,
One thing that we see like a trend in the major leagues in general right now are guys throwing more up in the zone and having success with that. You're a guy that's seen success with that, especially with your fastball. But it's a little bit of an anomaly when we look at our data and our trends that we look at as we build out, because you do have a little bit lower of an arm slot and you're not just pure backspin. You have a guy that kind of has a mix of horizontal and vertical break with that, but you are able to be obviously pretty, you know, really high spin efficiency with that. And you're able to get away with throwing up in the zone and not just get away with it, but actually make that be a strikeout and a dominant force of that. So can you talk a little bit about that and how you're able to still find success with that?
Well, I mean, if you wouldn't have told me all the data, I mean, I know all that stuff. But one thing that, you know, was always instilled in me as a pitcher when I was young in college and whatnot is you establish it. You pitch in and you pitch in for effect and you pitch in for strikes and you make it known that you're going to go in there because that opens up everything else, especially my changeup being my best pitch up until these last few years. It's like you pitch in to open up a way, you know, and I mean, the second that you can stand a hitter up, it opens up everything else, right? And the second you get them to collapse, well, it opens up everything else on the other side of the plate. So it's a coupling of those two things. And, you know, it's like if pitching was so, if you know, attacking a hitter was a video game, it'd be like, okay, well, there's the blue zone. Throw to that every time and you're going to get, it's going to work. Well, it doesn't always work that way, right? So yeah, though my profile may not, I may not be the guy like, I mean, guys like a Verlander or Walker Buehler who have the high octane fastball. And maybe that's, if you're saying that's where you just throw every single pitch and you're going to have a lot of success, if they can know they can get there, that's awesome. For me, it's like I know I can't do that. But if I can pitch in and maybe stand a guy up, well, it opens up down and it opens up. You know, if I can see you stay away and take a guy's eyes out there, well, I know there's going to be more room up and in for a heater and also a slider down and in, you know, not to mention a curveball working off the heater line now or changeup working off that away line. So it's all about just working your lines, understanding the swings, understanding what they're doing. And then when the time is right, executing that pitch. There's times where I don't execute it and I still get away with it, right? That happens. That's pitching, you know? I mean, you know, for any pitcher, right? No one, it's never just, oh, I'm just going to throw to the happy zone and it's always going to be out, right? It's understanding how you're setting that guy up, you know? And that's a thing that I've been able to learn from a lot of guys. I mean, you know, Jordan Zimmermann, Justin Verlander, Sanchi, you know, all these guys that, you know, Pelf, all these guys that were older in the rotations in front of me, I was able to learn from them because, I mean, they all do things differently and the way they attack hitters differently and the way they approach different things differently. There's so much to learn from it.
And Matthew, no doubt, man, you know, one of the top pitchers in the game of baseball, but also, you know, very well known as a good dude and doing well in the community. I think that obviously goes a really long way. And, you know, we're familiar with your project, The Kingdom Home. Could you share a little bit about that and how maybe our listeners could get involved with it?
Yeah. So my wife and I, my wife got her degree in political science. She's always had a heart for social justice. She really opened up my eyes to how big of an issue the child sex trade is in all over the world, in our country, but I mean, especially in some other countries as well. So we had an opportunity. She actually had a job with an organization called Remember New out of college working in this realm. And we had an opportunity present itself in 2018 to start our own nonprofit. So we did. It's called Kingdom Home. Our website is kingdomhome.org. And our mission is to end child sex trafficking through prevention. We started out there with 36 girls in one home. Some were rescued from the sex trade, some were on the prevention side. And from ages 6 to 15. And over the course of the last 2 years, it's grown to 156 children, boys and girls, in 4 homes. And our mission, is basically finding children who are at risk, offering them a chance to stay at the home. And basically, it's not an orphanage, it's a home. They have a host parent, they have brothers or sisters, depending on what home they're in, boys or girls. And, they'll get 3 meals a day, they get their own bed. They have an opportunity to go to school every day, get an education. Down the road, Kingdom Home will provide vocational training or, pay for university if that's the route they want to go. And it's pretty cool. It's special. It's amazing how God has kind of grown it and the support we've had from people around the world. And, it's a real eye-opening experience getting to go over to Uganda and, go over to Eastern Africa and just see how life is there. And, just going there and seeing children live as children should, just in pure joy in a safe place, having fun, singing, dancing with nothing of the past that could have been or was. It's pretty special. And it's pretty cool to see how it's continuing to grow. And all those house parents over there in Uganda that are sharing our mission with us are the true heroes. And it's pretty cool that they're in their day in and day out influencing these children.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I know that too. A lot of people have been helping support, and even teammates in the Tigers organization. It's just fantastic. Probably a lot of listeners, even with hearing that sort of testimony around that, would love to be able to help out. So again, encourage people to head over to kingdomhome.org and check that out.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Awesome. We're going to get into a couple of Twitter questions that have been shot into us, if that works for you.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, cool. So we had three that we kind of picked out that we thought would do a really good job. And this first one I think is super interesting. A guy named Matt sent this one in and said, if you're a kid today looking to play D1/get drafted, what would be different from how you trained when you were going through that process to how kids can train today?
Well, I was very, very fortunate enough to have my dad as my coach from 9 to 18 going up to college. And, the one thing, I get to go help my dad out with coaching his summer ball teams. And, I bring out the Rapsodo stuff and all. And a lot of kids get caught up in like trying to make things happen. And I always come back to, hey, you need to know who you are. They want to get caught up in the data and all this stuff. And it's like, man, all this stuff is great. But you need to know who you are first before you get into that. Because if you don't know who you are as a ball player, much less, more importantly, a person, and you're going to go take on all this stuff and try to just create stuff, if you don't know what the foundations of your game are, man, this isn't going to do you any good. This stuff would have been so beneficial to me. I remember my senior year, I would throw 94 one pitch and then throw 82 on another fastball. And it was a simple thing with letting my arm drag and my arm slot would drop and my shoulders would collapse. If I was able to stay stacked, things would have been a lot different, right? But I didn't have, it's hard to tell that on a video, right? Not to mention not an iPhone video that we're able to pop out right away and click it now. Right? For me, it was like the times when I grew the most was out there with a bucket of balls with my buddies, throwing BP and feeling my swing and understanding how that works and getting into a bullpen situation and just messing around, not doing it because I had to, but doing to say like, okay, well, I want to do this. That's the best way to do it, man. It's just to repeat what you do, to go have fun out there and do it. And then once you're able to do that, then incorporate all the technology, incorporate, things like a new training program, a new, like a way to finding a place like Driveline and going at that the right way. That's when things can start to become, you understand what you do and who you are, then you're having your mind is working in that way. And then when you incorporate technology that can give you instant feedback and data, that's what that was. I can do that a lot better now. I know how I'm doing that. Instead of just sitting there going, there's a fastball that had 17 inches of vertical break. Well, I was like, how come the next one was 10? It's like, you don't know what's going on in your body. Well, you're not going to know how to figure it out because you can't even, you don't need the Rapsodo to tell you that. You need to go out there and be able to feel the same thing every single pitch and feel your body go this way or that way, or feel your, where the weight is on your cleats and whatnot. That's when that other, that's when the technology is going to come take you to a whole nother level, because you know who, how it works.
I love that. You mentioned a couple of times the importance of repetition, and couldn't agree more. We had another question here, kind of talking data. We actually had from a Jason on Twitter. Does spin rate help you determine if you should throw a four seam or two seam fastball? Is that something you, in your process, that you took a look at on what kind of spin you're creating?
Yeah, completely. I always just assumed I had a good spin rate because I could throw a ball 300 feet, but still throw 86 miles per hour. You know what I mean? When I'm playing long toss. And I just remember like being able, I remember just thinking in my mind, I want to stay behind the baseball and spin it perfectly, as perfect as I can to make it take off. You know, when I come on the side of the ball, that's when the ball takes off. Well, that's, you know, and then so like the spin rate definitely plays into it. I mean, I remember Mike Pelfrey and his ball didn't spin at all, but it was a bowling ball sinker, right? It's like, well, he shouldn't though try to force, throw a force him up in the zone because that's so good and it has no spin. So stick with that. So definitely, I think if you have a higher spin rate, you should throw a four-seam fastball.
I love the bowling ball reference because, you know, that's something I think that's traditional is, you know, the bowling ball, low spin rate, it's heavy to catch. You know, when you play catch with a guy, you know, hitting the smack in the glove, heavy. And then the opposite, the life to it, you know, like you mentioned, you know, that ball that you see travel, you've got that life to that pitch. And, you know, now we know those things as high versus low spin rate. That's pretty cool to see that process.
That's when we had kind of a fun one. The guy named Jake sent this one and just said, if you could face any batter in MLB history, who would that be?
Oh, man.
Who are you striking out?
Who am I striking out? I don't know what's going to happen. I'd love to face Griffey. That'd be so cool. That guy was my hero. He'd probably take me over the hand-operated scoreboard at the Kingdome.
That's awesome. Does that come back to the Seattle days?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, he was my hero growing up. Him and, I mean, Griffey, you can name any of those Mariners from the 90s and early 2000s. I mean, those were my guys, from Griffey to Johnson to Edgar to Buehner. I mean, those were, you know, even just like seeing Joey Cora coach third base for the Pirates. I'm like, it's Joey Cora, you know, I mean, that was our leadoff hitter. That was the guy, you know? So, I mean, it's, you know, those guys, the reason I love baseball is getting to watch those games and my dad, you know, he'd have his company at season tickets and, you know, when the Mariners weren't good, it'd be always like, hey, no one took the tickets. You want to go? It'd be like 7 o'clock when we got home from work and the game would already be started. But I'd scarf down dinner and run out the door with them. And we'd just hop on the bus and go downtown. And, it'd be, you know, that was a lot of fun. You know,
it's cool. Well, Matthew, just appreciate you coming on and everything that you've given us, all the time and all the answers. I know our listeners are going to love it. And again, best of luck with everything coming up with the season, whenever it gets going, and everything with Kingdom Home as well.
Hey guys, thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it. Thanks for your product. You know, really grateful for what it's done for my career and excited to see how it's going to be used in the future.
This next session we're going to get into is called the wrap up. And what we're trying to do here is give a little bit of a focus on a Rapsodo specific element. So whether that be a new product, a new feature, and maybe even a partnership or something that we've done from an integration standpoint that we feel like you as listeners would like to know about. And so there's going to be a little bit more product focused.
Today, we want to discuss a bit about the new Rapsodo National Database to be able to see players at different age groups, different tiers showing up on the National Database.
Something that we had on the development cycle for a little bit later on, you know, that's when this was forecasted to come out. But with the coronavirus and the way that's sort of ruined a lot of kids, senior seasons, junior seasons, et cetera, kind of prime time in order to get drafted or scouted, we feel like this database is going to come along and not only help coaches with getting their kids out there, but also help the players. They need a voice. They need a way to find, you know, a way to get to that next level. And this database is something we feel like can kind of be that conduit to bring both of them together.
This database will be able to be found on the Rapsodo website. So any coaches, players out there can take a look at, you know, if you're a player seeing in your own age group, your own tier, kind of seeing where you stack up. And for players and for the coaches and scouts out there to be able to evaluate players, you know, in one spot, you know, based off that Rapsodo data.
Absolutely. We're doing kind of a unique scoring system. We call it a super score and largely taken off of like SAT, ACT sort of thing from a college prep standpoint. The way that we're doing this is taking your best. What we want to do when we're getting you in front of these coaches is to provide the best look at you. And so it's going to take a super scoring system to take the top 5% basically of each of your different player data points that you're going to have. And primarily from a pitching standpoint, we're talking velocity, spin rate, and then total break. Those are three most primary elements. And on the hitting side, we're going to talk about X velocity and distance. Both of those things you're going to take in, again, your top 5%, and then you can be filtered out by region, by age group, et cetera, so we can see where you stand within your own state, where you stand within your own graduation class from a high school or college standpoint. And it gives coaches also, and we're talking college and also pro, a huge, huge user base is going to be there. Remember, we work with all 30 teams. They're going to be out there, and they're looking for data too. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, that right now from a scouting recruiting standpoint, everyone is looking for data and a way to find data on players that they won't normally be able to get access to. And this is something the database will be able to provide. Thanks again for joining us and listening. If you like what you hear, give it a like, give it a share. Try to get out there and spread the word a little bit. If you want to connect with us and maybe get your question mentioned on the podcast, just head over to Twitter or Instagram or any of the other social media platforms, and you can tag us using the hashtag RapsodoPodcast.